Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
It took a long time. Some thought it might never happen. We're still taking on board its significance, its emotional and moral weight. But Osama bin Laden said the president last night is dead, shot deep in Pakistan by a U.S. assault team. This hour, On Point, the operation that ended Osama bin Laden's life. You can join the conversation. How are you responding to the news of bin Laden's death? How is it sinking in? What's your question on how it happened after all these years? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Early this morning, after the president's announcement, Americans gathered outside the White House gates.
USA! 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 USA!
And here, the president himself in an extraordinary late-night message to the American people from the White House.
Last August, after years of painstaking work by our intelligence community, I was briefed on a possible lead to bin Laden. It was far from certain, and it took many months to run this thread to ground. I met repeatedly with my national security team as we developed more information about the possibility that we had located bin Laden hiding within a compound deep inside Pakistan. And finally, last week, I determined that we had enough intelligence to take action and authorized an operation to get Osama bin Laden and bring him to justice.
In this hour, we're going to look at what we know about that operation after all the frustrated and failed efforts over many years. Osama bin Laden, the president now telling the country and the world, dead. Joining me first today from Washington is Adam Entis. He is national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Adam, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you.
There must be sort of rolling briefings at this point, but what exactly do we know about how many U.S. forces, how many helicopters, where did they take off, how did they land? Tell us what you can. Describe what you can about what exactly happened.
Well, at this point, it remains a bit unclear exactly how this was carried out and specifically how this was carried out without the Pakistanis knowing about it, which is what we were told. What we believe is that there were two helicopters that went into the compound. The compound had very high walls, and as they landed, one of the helicopters had a malfunction as a result of some backwash of air and had a hard landing on the ground. The teams went out. A firefight broke out. Osama bin Laden was shot in the head. Then they went through the process of identifying the body, and they were out of there within 40 minutes.
We're reading four helicopters from Pakistan. The one helicopter that went down, Americans burned, or I guess blew up before they left, so as not to leave it there. Four helicopters, two helicopters. Do we know how many U.S. personnel?
We don't know the number of personnel. We believe that two helicopters went into the compound itself that we know of, and one had to be destroyed because they wanted to cover the tracks for this. And everybody else piled into the other helicopter, which then took Osama bin Laden's body, we believe was taken from there to Afghanistan. And after that, it was within 24 hours, was dumped at sea.
Dumped at sea, buried at sea. There is a Muslim mandate that bodies be dealt with quickly after their death. Do we know where at sea? Are they giving any idea whatsoever? Clearly, this must be so that there is no burial place to be a potential shrine for admirers.
The U.S. had wanted to try to see if the Saudis would take the body, but they turned that down. So the decision was made within 24, in keeping with the Islamic tradition, to have bury the body within the 24 hours, and that's what they did. At this point, we don't know what sort of evidence, physical, video, the Americans took. Obviously, if they haven't already completed the DNA testing, they're doing that as we speak. It's interesting to see how they actually identified the body after bin Laden was shot. According to officials that we spoke to, in addition to kind of looking at the body and matching it up with the information they had, they also were able to get corroboration and positive identification from the other family members who were at the compound.
Now, and a son of bin Laden, we're told, also killed in this raid. This not in the caves, not in a hut, not on the frontier, but only 40, 50 miles from the capital of Pakistan, Islamabad, in Abbottabad, a town well known in Pakistan as a military center, and really, this not in tough conditions at all. This is in quite a significant facility, just built, we're told, Adam, in 2005 there. 12-foot walls, 18-foot walls, barbed wire all around. Describe what you can about this town and the house, the compound, where bin Laden apparently has died.
Right. This is like an exurb of Islamabad. It's called Abbottabad. And you have a lot of retired army guys that live in this area. There's a big army garrison there. The U.S. believes that this facility costs about $1 million to build. At the time, there wasn't a lot of housing around it or other housing around it, but in recent years, there have been some additional buildings in the area. They believe that it was built specifically for the purposes of housing bin Laden. What's interesting now is to try to figure out, and a lot of U.S. officials are speculating as to whether some elements within Pakistan's intelligence agency might have been aware that he was there, since it was so close to the garrison and so close to where so many retired ISI and military people were living.
ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Service. Of course, President Obama last night trying to put a face of cooperation on this. Here he is talking about Pakistan's contributions to the overall effort to find Osama bin Laden.
It's important to note that our counterterrorism cooperation with Pakistan helped lead us to bin Laden and the compound where he was hiding. Indeed, bin Laden had declared war against Pakistan as well and ordered attacks against the Pakistani people. Tonight, I called President Zardari, and my team has also spoken with their Pakistani counterparts. They agree that this is a good and historic day for both of our nations, and going forward, it is essential that Pakistan continue to join us in the fight against al-Qaeda and its affiliates.
The president, President Obama, making friendly noises toward Pakistan last night, but lots of suspicion about this location where Osama bin Laden was. It's hard to imagine, Adam Entis, that the construction of such a big compound, so closely guarded, barbed wire, all the rest, armed men on the walls, we're reading here, could go without notice in a town where people would be security aware. This was a military town.
Right. It truly is one of the big questions, probably the biggest question that we're all going to be trying to figure out in the coming days. To what extent were the Pakistanis aware that this facility was a safe house for a prominent high value target, or bin Laden, if they actually knew that he was there? You had when the president talks about the Pakistanis helping lead to this identification of this compound. We do know that the Pakistanis are holding, senior al-Qaeda and Taliban officials, such as Berader, and there was recently arrested in Pakistan in a similar, very nearby, of a suspect by the name of Umar Patak. And so the U.S. has been given access, irregularly, but has been given access to these detainees, and that helped the U.S. in pinning things down. But it looks like this was largely, at least since last August, when the intelligence started pouring in, that this was largely, if not entirely, an American-led intelligence operation.
Reports today as well that this goes back to detainees in the prison at Guantanamo Bay, who may have put Americans onto a courier, who apparently helped lead them to this compound. Now, the operation itself, your paper is reporting, Adam, the Wall Street Journal, was conducted by U.S. military, but under the authority of the CIA. What can you tell us about that? Why the CIA? Is that been this sort of central command for operations inside Pakistan?
Well, I mean, there are basically two ways that operations could be conducted. They could be a military operation, which is technically called Title 10, and there could be a Title 50 program, which is a secret covert program that the CIA would be able to operate. And that can be done with very little. That would be just presidential authorization from the United States, and also foreign governments where the operations would be conducted would not necessarily have to be informed. It provides for more security. We understand that the military personnel were basically put under the authority of Panetta, the CIA director, to carry this out, and that's increasingly what you see happening with these kind of operations. The military especially Navy SEALs and other special forces have the capabilities to kind of do these things. By having it under the cloak of CIA, it ensures greater secrecy.
The president, starting in March, March 14th, reportedly held the first of what would be five national security meetings over 6 weeks or so to go over plans for this operation. And is it your understanding that in all of that time, Pakistan was never alerted? How could helicopters come flying right into the middle of Pakistan military territory without some kind of Pakistani heads up for Pakistan?
Right. No, it is remarkable. I mean, according to Pakistani intelligence, ISI, they believe that the helicopters came from Afghanistan. That's a long flight. It's hard to believe, certainly, that they would be able to do so without the Pakistanis seeing these aircraft coming in over their territory with their radar, which raises a lot of questions. I mean, it could be that the U.S. was using kind of a made-up mission to explain why the helicopters would be passing over the territory. The U.S. does have military equipment in Pakistan that are operating out of bases there. The U.S. runs a relatively small training program that involves helicopters, so they could have used that as the cover. At this stage, we're really not sure to what extent the Pakistanis might have been told. It's also, this was a 40-minute-long firefight. They were in the base. They were in this facility compound for 40 minutes.
That's a big fight. A lot of firepower. Big explosions reportedly heard in the town at the outset.
Exactly. A lot of security. Pakistani security would be in the area. The question, why didn't they come at that point to the compound after they heard the first reports? You know, they were supposedly, we've heard that residents in the area were tweeting and putting out information about hearing a major firefight take place in their area. So you got to wonder why the Pakistani security forces, which were nearby, didn't immediately come to the scene.
A lot of mystery here, but we're still digging in. A thunderclap of news over the last overnight that Osama bin Laden dead in Pakistan after a U.S. assault team helicopters in just 40-50 miles from the capital of Islamabad in a kind of leafy suburb there. Adam Entis, national security correspondent with the Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for being with us, Adam.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the killing of Osama bin Laden, the climax of the long, long, often frustrating hunt, how they planned it, how they did it, and what this killing, what this death means now. You can join the conversation today. What was your reaction when you heard this news? Celebration, somberness, relief, anxiety about what comes next? Throw your mind back. Many Americans will remember those days just after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Here's just 6 days after the attacks. President Bush said he was determined to catch Osama bin Laden dead or alive. He spoke with reporters at the Pentagon.
Osama bin Laden is just one person. He is representative of networks of people who absolutely have made their cause to defeat the freedoms that we take that we understand, and we will not allow him to do so.
Mr. Bin Laden dead.
I want him held. I want justice. And there's an old poster out west, as I recall, that said "Wanted, dead or alive."
President George W. Bush, 6 days after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, they're wanted, dead or alive. We go right now to Islamabad, Pakistan, and Carlotta Gall. She covers Pakistan and Afghanistan for the New York Times. Carlotta, I know you've just arrived in Islamabad in response to this news. What's the sense that, what are you seeing, feeling in Pakistan at this point? I know your reporting is just beginning about how Pakistanis are responding to the news of bin Laden's death.
Well, it's very interesting. There's been no demonstrations or no violence at all, so it's accepted with amazement, really, on the streets. But the most interesting thing is the reaction among the officials, dead silence for most of the day, and now a foreign ministry statement recognizing that the Americans did the operation, that, you know, essentially recognizing that the Pakistanis were not in on the operation, were not informed until it was underway or over, and that America had a right to pursue him anywhere in the world. And so this is very interesting because Pakistan has before reacted quite strongly when Americans have used drone attacks or even made incursions from Afghanistan. And so this is an acceptance that they could do this, and that, you know, the Pakistan had to just accept it because he was found on their territory. So I think there's some embarrassment, but some acceptance, rather than any retaliation or anger on the part of the Pakistani military or intelligence service.
Carlotta, Osama bin Laden was very notably far from caves and mountains, far from the frontier, right here in the middle of Abbottabad, which, as you well know, a big military town in Pakistan. From Pakistanis, ordinary Pakistanis, citizens, or officials, are you hearing embarrassment, shame from the government about the fact that here he was right under their noses in a big, prominent, fortified compound?
Yes, I mean, I think you hear the shame and the embarrassment in the silence. I just talked to one senior security official, very muted, very embarrassed, very tight-lipped. There's not going to be an outpouring of feeling on this. I think they're going to be reticent about this. On the streets, though, it's sheer amazement. I think the average man doesn't know what to think because, you know, their government has never really told it straight for many years. They don't really believe the Americans, but I think many of them saw the speech by President Obama and now by Hillary Clinton. So everyone's glued to their TVs and radios about this. But I think the average man doesn't know what to think because, you know, they've been told so many different things over the years. You know, we can always remember President Musharraf for many years saying he thought he was dead, you know, or that he was in Afghanistan. So I think, you know, many people were very confused. Inside the government and inside the military and the intelligence, that would be the most interesting thing, and that we won't know for some time, I think. But their reticence, I think, indicates certainly some embarrassment.
Carlotta, you're a very seasoned reporter in this neck of the woods. You know Pakistan, Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda well. Is it plausible that Pakistan would not have known at some level of its officialdom that Osama bin Laden was in that house right there, you know, in a Pakistani military center? Is that at all plausible?
I think it is. I mean, I think for I've been here nearly 10 years, and I've fluctuated from one to the other. Is it, you know, are they turning a blind eye? Are they incompetent? Or are they really supporters? And I think there are all those elements in Pakistan. There are definitely supporters of bin Laden, and so there could have been people who knew. But I don't think we can say yet that the military knew he set this house up and were, you know, protecting him in any way. It looks like he tried to just live behind high walls, like a sort of rich, you know, recluse. Of course, the military should have done more and the intelligence to find him, but I think that was more turning a blind eye or reluctant to go prodding a hornet's nest, perhaps, than actually sheltering him. But of course, there are people who say they were. There are supporters in the military who are supporters of Al-Qaeda and who would have been actively aiding him and helping him. So that's what we've cut out now to uncover that and establish whether that's possible or not.
And Carlotta, tell us, if you would, what this operation says to you about U.S. military and CIA operations more generally inside Pakistan. I mean, how they could track this for so long, keep it quiet for months and months, 8 months or so, we're told. We can't help wonder if there's some connection to that bizarre Raymond Davis case a couple of months ago, where the CIA contractor killed a couple of Pakistanis on the streets in Lahore, if that was some example of tension building here. What does this indicate about U.S. military and CIA operations generally inside Pakistan?
They've definitely stepped up their operations. We know the drone strikes have stepped up. We know the surveillance facilities that they've got both in Afghanistan and over in Pakistan has increased. And I think that we were certainly aware of a lot of these contractors and people working for the CIA coming in. We could see them driving around in, you know, unmarked cars. So everyone was aware that there were more and more Americans working, doing things here. And, of course, we've seen a huge increase in night raids in Afghanistan as well, where you know, every night we've got several operations where they go on any province in Afghanistan and swoop down and pick people up or arrest them or even have a shootout. So I think that the scale under the McChrystal and then the Petraeus, General Petraeus's regime in Afghanistan, that's increased enormously. So it didn't surprise me at all that they were also looking over this side as well. And their surveillance, as we all know, has become incredibly technologically brilliant. So I think that in a way doesn't surprise me. We saw that increase under President Obama, the determination to get to the key figures. So, but what is impressive is the secrecy and keeping it secret from Pakistan, it seems, as well. Is a clear mark of their seriousness about the whole episode.
Carlotta, a final question to you. The likely impact of this, it's been so long in coming, many people had practically given up that they would ever see this happen. Now it has. How do you foresee the implications of this, the consequences of this on Islamist violence in this area, Al-Qaeda operations in this area? Is this a big setback or not?
I think it's a setback in that obviously he was a very charismatic leader and he was also a source of funds. I mean, he could still call on people, I think, in Arab countries to fund his jihad. And I think they will lose that. Al-Qaeda will lose a fantastic, you know, figurehead, a fundraiser. They've got the brain still because al-Zawahiri, the number two, is around still, and he's often thought to be the brains behind the operation. But he doesn't have the ability to tap into the big money sources, or he doesn't have the same charisma. But I think there's other leaders who are going to step up. So I don't think Al-Qaeda will be finished. But I think they've had a body blow. As for the fight, yeah, I don't know quite how it's going to play out in Pakistan, but certainly we haven't seen rampaging crowds. When Nadia Bhutto was killed, we had riots for 3 days. You know, the airports were closed down. Mm-hmm. It was a major crisis because so many people were upset at her loss. Here, so far today, there's been nothing. People are surprised that there's been no demonstrations. So in that sense, I don't think we'll see Pakistan being destabilized, but we could see some of the Al-Qaeda people doing suicide bombings in the coming days and weeks. And retaliation, you know, in his memory. So I think everyone's bracing for all sorts of things.
Quiet amazement, no small bewilderment in Pakistan, Carlotta Gall tells us. Carlotta, with the New York Times, there today in Islamabad. Thank you very, very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I want to turn back to Washington now, and Bob Drogan, national security correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Bob, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We've been talking since the early days after 9/11, back when there was hot pursuit of Osama bin Laden in Tora Bora. People remember all this. What's your reaction to the news last night and today, Bob, of this death, this killing?
Oh, you know, Obama gets Osama. It's an extraordinary achievement. 10 years, it's a long time coming. It shows in some ways the trail was cold for a very long time. They thought he was hiding out in the tribal regions, in these caves or in these sort of rugged redoubts. And obviously, he built himself a very comfortable refuge there in Abbottabad. His leadership has been more nominal over the last couple of years. The biggest danger, certainly here in the United States, has been from people inspired by him rather than operations that he has sanctioned or conducted. I mean, he really has been cut off. But still, it eliminates a figurehead who was critical for those inspired by that kind of murderous ideology.
And the response you're seeing in Washington today, Bob, not in the streets. We've seen that. We'll hear no doubt more of that. The singing and chanting. But in official corridors, is this a high fives day or less so? I mean, years ago, we can imagine it would have been. I wonder if there's still that kind of emotion attached to this in corridors of power in Washington after so many years.
I don't think you know, you're going to see the White House people gloating about this. Obviously, there's tremendous satisfaction on the parts of you know, everyone who had a role in this, and justifiably so. I mean, 10 years, it's you know, people spent their careers trying to track this guy down, and you know, and it's an extraordinary achievement. The you know, as we learn more details, the sort of the spade work, the detective work in in tracking down this courier, getting a, you know, a nom de guerre of this guy, and then figuring out who he might be, and you know, 4 years ago, and then figuring out the area that he might be in, and then finding the house. And even so, even when the raid occurred, they still weren't 100% sure that it was Bin Laden inside. They said, they told us last night, they had a high probability it was you know, a high value target in there, and a strong possibility that it was Bin Laden, but they weren't sure that, which tells us that they didn't have an eyewitness or you know, someone close inside the compound. So you know, they were obviously. They got it. They got the DNA, and you know, tossed the body out at sea. So.
And then the news: it's him. He's dead. Let me get our listeners in, if I may. Stephen in Windham, Connecticut. Stephen, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Bob Drogan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. It's what I think this is the greatest news I've heard probably in my life. I'm so happy about the. You know, I'm overwhelmed with tears, and but part of me, there's this. Skepticism, you know, some guy builds a mansion next to their Westport, a 10-minute
West Point,
walk
yeah.
from
mm-hmm.
West Point. I mean, mm-hmm. or an affluent suburb, and you know, that's like John Dillinger building a you know a mansion next to a bank. I mean, yeah. it's somebody had to be complicit in the Pakistani government on some level. There had to have been complicity, and it makes you wonder if there was complicity to 9/11. You know, it just leads you to all these other questions. Now, I'm sure there's good people in Pakistan. And another thing, I'd like to see these U.S. Naval SEALs, the whole thing declassified. I'd like to see who these U.S. Naval SEALs were and bring them up, give them awards. I mean, it's a great day for
Stephen. You know, let us pick it up right there. You hear that relief and satisfaction in this caller's voice, Bob? He wants to see the Navy SEALs sort of lined up at the White House for a medal ceremony. Do you think it will ever be that plainly laid out before the world?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I imagine each of these guys is going to write a book before we're done. You know, these kinds of things don't stay secret forever. The people who, you know, captured Saddam Hussein eventually were identified, and those who interrogated him, you know, came forward and whatnot. So I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there's already video of the house. We got a very detailed briefing last night at midnight, and more details coming out by the minute today. So I wouldn't be surprised about that. And as for the complicity of the Pakistanis, I don't have any reason to assume that being the case. I mean, I've spent a lot of time over there. There are a lot of big compounds. There are a lot of walled-in areas. If he came in there and never left the house, there's no reason to assume that they were protecting him, per se. But we'll find out. I mean, it's obviously a huge black eye, an embarrassment for them. It was it's not West Point. It's, you know, it's a muddy town.
But there is a military academy there.
But it's not West Point.
It's for Pakistani military leaders, I'm told.
It's a garrison town. It is. But it's not. In any case, it's a huge embarrassment for the Pakistanis, obviously.
The scenes from inside that house, the video you've seen, was this lavish? Was this not, Bob?
I just saw, frankly, what ABC News posted. Mm-hmm. It looks like it was the pictures they had basically showed rooms that had been ransacked. They obviously stripped anything of any intelligence value out of there. You know, mattresses torn around. It was described as a million-dollar building. Certainly the pictures didn't give any sense of that. It looked rather tawdry.
$1 million maybe in fortifications, but not perhaps in chandeliers. Bob Drogan with the LA Times joining us today from Washington. Thank you very much for being with us.
Pleasure. Take care.
I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the killing of Osama bin Laden, the climax of a long, long hunt, nearly a decade since 9/11. And the news last night from the president in Washington, he says Osama bin Laden dead. U.S. assault team into that compound in northern Pakistan. 40-minute firefight. Osama bin Laden shot in the head. His body, we're told, has been buried, dumped in the sea. Lots of response online. Blue Star Families, the support group, talking about a wide array of emotions attached to this, saying we're so proud of our military community. Rena writes, I am a Muslim, so to me it means that half the battle is won for the true Muslims. We can now reclaim our religion. This may not be the end of fanaticism in the Islamic faith, she writes, but it surely is a crippling blow to the movement that hijacked, she's writing there, her faith and much more. Here's President Obama last night saying this was a significant victory, but not the end of the al-Qaeda threat.
For over two decades, bin Laden has been al-Qaeda's leader and symbol, and has continued to plot attacks against our country and our friends and allies. The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda. Yet his death does not mark the end of our effort. There's no doubt that al-Qaeda will continue to pursue attacks against us. We must, and we will, remain vigilant at home and abroad.
President Obama last night announcing the news of the assault on the compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan, and the death of Osama bin Laden, shot through the head. Anthony Cordesman joins us now from Washington. Arlie E. Burke, Chair in Strategy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Anthony Cordesman, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
Many years since 9/11, an awful lot of effort from Tora Bora and right on through. What's your first reaction to the news of this death and how it transpired, Anthony?
Well, it's a remarkably effective military operation, particularly if, as reported, it had to be run virtually without notifying anyone in Pakistan, conducted in a city which is the center of the Pakistani Army's retirement, a full brigade and their equivalent of West Point, and then successful in 40 minutes. It's really an incredible tribute to the quality of special forces, the intelligence community, and everyone who planned this.
We know there's no guarantee of success in these things. I mean, people of a certain age will remember all the way back to Jimmy Carter in April 1980 when he tried to send helicopters into Iran, Tehran, to rescue hostages there. They ended up just down in the sand. There are no guarantees on an operation like this.
Not for anyone. I mean, the Israelis have had major failures, and we've had many unpublicized failures. The truth is that these are high-risk operations, and we always need to remember that no matter how well-planned and no matter how professional they are, they can always go wrong.
We're still learning details here, but does it, I mean, you're looking from a very informed position there. Does it make sense to you that these helicopters would have come in from outside Pakistan, from Afghanistan? It's a long distance. Lots of Pakistani military between that border and Abbottabad. U.S. helicopters have been shot down closer to the at the border by Pakistan forces. Or could these choppers have been inside Pakistan already?
Well, it's always possible, but we have to remember that there are certain specially configured helicopters that are used by special forces. This is an area which has almost continuous mountain coverage, which makes any kind of radar surveillance very difficult. When helicopters are shot down, they're usually engaging Pakistani forces or very well-prepared people who are already involved in a firefight. So, no, you can't make any generalizations as yet. I think, too, that there may turn out to have been an intelligence presence on the ground. That's, I think, something that is going to be a major issue of concern for anyone who is a terrorist, who thinks that somehow they can have a full sanctuary inside of Pakistan. But that doesn't mean that there was any support from Pakistan in the process.
Is it an indictment of Pakistan's military, its intelligence services, that bin Laden was here in Abbottabad, in this town, in their midst?
I think, again, we're going to need to be a little patient. Everybody is racing to speculate, and we really don't have the data. It's possible, for example, when you look at the compounds in this city, to see that this was just one of many compounds and not particularly large. from some reports, bin Laden effectively was almost forced into a sealed room, and very few people went in and out of this building. If there was collusion from the Pakistanis, it might have been something as simple as a bribe, or it could have been that they were told that this was just another Taliban facility and had no way to look inside. So I think rather than rush to judgment, we do need to remember that senior Pakistani officials in the Pakistani Foreign Office did not protest this operation. Instead, essentially, they congratulated the United States on it, and that's a very different tone from the one we've heard in recent weeks and months.
Very frosty recent weeks and months since that Raymond Davis incident and arrest. Anthony Cordesman, we have questions here. Josh in Boston, you're on the air, Josh.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
I'd like to preface this by saying that I have no doubt and a very strong feeling that Osama bin Laden needed to be removed from power, needed to be removed as a figurehead for such extremist or terrorist movements. But I got to tell you, to be perfectly forthright, when I heard the news last night, I went on Facebook and I saw a lot of my friends and colleagues were very exuberant, joyful, expressing a lot of celebration, and I had mixed feelings.
Why?
Honestly, a couple of reasons. One, that at its basic, most basic principle, we authorized the sort of the state authorized, we killed a human being, and I think there needs to be, no matter how heinous his crimes, no matter what a tyrant he was, we need to have some pause and some humility, at least for that profound level of action. And two, I'm just a little bit worried about restitution. I think a lot of people may have that question. And how will we be judged in the next couple of weeks or few weeks and months by our reaction?
You mean retribution? You mean other Al Qaeda movements to revenge bin Laden's killing?
Yes. I have some fear that maybe over exuberance or a positive, such a positive, enormous reaction or celebration may lend itself to some retribution from Al Qaeda or anyone who has been in the past inspired by Osama bin Laden's movements. And just feel like we have to be careful as what we idealize ourselves as a peace loving nation to remember how grave and profound this event was, and that it is, after all, the taking of human life.
Yeah, Josh, we've got it. Of course, many lives taken on 9/11, and many, many have died in the years since then in so many locations. Anthony Cordesman, what about the implications of this? First of all, just the simple subtraction of Osama bin Laden from the scene in terms of al-Qaeda and the Islamist movement. And then you heard Josh there thinking about the wider implications of how this is presented, how Americans react to it, how that's received around the world. How do you look at that?
Well, 3 points very quickly. First, under international law, there are absolutely no limits to attacking someone simply because they are a leader. Once they conduct an act of war, and it does not matter whether they happen to be the leader of a state or the leader of a movement, this is not an exercise in criminal justice. Second, we are facing the reality that this is a leader largely isolated from his movement, which has changed radically over the 10 years since 9/11. There are many franchise groups all over the world. There are key centers in places like Yemen, centers that are operating out of areas like Algeria. We aren't going to see this movement disappear. And while people have tended to focus on Zawahiri, who is an Egyptian,
number two,
as a potential leader, that whole ranking bears almost no relation to any intelligence. It's just a matter of how the media have been covering this movement for years. There's a whole host of younger leaders from many different countries scattered throughout this region and operating in Europe. And if you look at this, you see places like Iraq, not just Yemen or Algeria or the sub-Saharan. When it comes down to reprisals and actions, it is certainly important to point out that the White House and the Pentagon have been very careful to warn journalists and warn people about celebrating this, about overreacting, about creating a situation that might trigger this, but no matter what we do, these movements are almost certainly going to pause and then try to find new ways to attack, to commit some kind of dramatic actions that can show they're still alive and still powerful. And the fact is that every single one of them, every operating element of Al-Qaeda and its affiliates, is still basically intact with the same capabilities it had before bin Laden was killed.
Is the U.S. better off with bin Laden dead then or not?
I think it's definitely better off for people who are moderates, for people in the region who are not extremists. It's already clear from a very wide range of media that this is something that has helped them become convinced they can deal with this broader threat. But will it lead to negative as well as positive consequences? Will it create a whole series of reactions that are hostile as well? Yes. We've seen them from Hamas. We've seen them from elements within the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. We've seen them from a whole variety of figures that oppose the United States, that oppose the kind of conflict we have inside Afghanistan, that don't like the way in which the war on terrorism is being conducted, as well as from extremist groups.
Anthony Kortesmann with the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington. Thank you very much for being with us today, Tony.
Thank you.
With us right now from London, Fawaz Jirjes, director of the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics. He's got The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, his new book coming out, author of Journey of the Jihadist. Fawaz Jirjes, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Your sense of the impact of this pretty stunning news overnight here of the death of Osama bin Laden, does this put us on new terrain? Does it change the dynamic fundamentally somehow?
No, it does not, unfortunately. I don't think it changes the strategic landscape. I don't think it will have any qualitative change on what's happening either in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iraq and Yemen and in other places. Keep in mind that Al-Qaeda as an organization is no longer potent. Osama bin Laden was not the operational head of Al-Qaeda. It is Ayman Zawahiri, second man in command, who has emerged as the leader of Al-Qaeda about 4 or 5 years ago. Al-Qaeda is almost crippled in the Pakistan's tribal areas along Afghanistan borders. It's down to almost 200 fighters in the Pakistan-Afghanistan areas. Most of its field lieutenants and mid-level managers have been eliminated. It does not have the capacity to carry out qualitative operations along the 9/11 lines. Despite its repeated threats in the last 10 years, it has failed to deliver on striking inside the United States. Bin Laden was important because he was the face of the global jihadist movement. But the world and the Middle East has moved beyond 9/11 and Osama bin Laden.
Were you surprised at the news, Fawaz? Did you think we would ever see this day? Many had come to doubt that we would.
I think you're absolutely correct. It was a critical surprise. In fact, the life of Osama bin Laden from the late 1990s to the present, measured by 0 hour to 10 years or 20 years, could have survived 10 years. But this tells you about what President Barack Obama has done in the last 2 years and a half. He made the fight against Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda a top priority. He shifted the focus from Iraq to the Afghanistan-Pakistan borders. He ordered the CIA and U.S. intelligence services to focus on Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. This is not just about Osama bin Laden. Today's events are as much about the new president of the United States and his rationality and credibility and determination. And he took responsibility, and he deserves responsibility for bringing Osama bin Laden to justice.
I know there's no single answer to this, Fawaz, but how do you think Osama bin Laden will, I don't know, if you can look years down the road, be remembered in the Islamic world? And there may be more than one answer to this. There may be many, but give us a shot at that.
You know, Tom, Osama bin Laden was a very humble creature. He was really more of a businessman in the 1980s. He discovered jihad in the raging battles against Soviet occupying forces in the 1980s. what this humble man, I mean, he was your typical business person, no jihadist, no clerical training.
But not humble in his ambitions. I mean, he
absolutely humble in the sense of his really capacity to do what he did since the late 1990s. And what I'm trying to say is that this particular man, who anyone in the 1960s or 70s or 80s would have mistaken him for your typical multimillionaire, multibillionaire, really, he changed the face of international politics. He sowed the seeds of one of the most insidious and potent occurrence in international politics, what we call transnational jihad or global jihadism. He forced the United States to undertake two, three major global wars on terror. I mean, think of what the damage he did and what the forces he unleashed against the most powerful nation in the world. So a critical segment of people who believe in him, they're going to remember him as a man who changed the face of the world, who forced the United States to come to terms with certain critical foreign policy issues in the Muslim world. Unfortunately, the record shows that he has done, or he did, a great deal of damage, not only for the United States and for the victims of 9/11, but even for the Muslim community. I think Osama bin Laden, as some of his own gurus and some of his own teachers have made it very clear, he basically he was responsible, accountable for the miseries and the misfortunes that had befallen the Muslim world since the late 1990s. Hundreds of thousands of casualties, tons of blood, rivers of blood on his hand. So you really have two opposing narratives, and depending on what particular ideological perspective you come from, you're going to view Osama bin Laden.
It's been a long, nearly 10 years, so much history and suffering there. Fawaz Jurjez, author of the forthcoming The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, thank you for joining us from London. Listeners, thank you for joining us as well. Osama bin Laden, dead. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.